Malik did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across West Midlands as you listen. This is their story. In Nuneaton, qualified candidates with the grades and determination to become doctors are locked out of medical training while hospital wards struggle with understaffing. The system that should connect willing people to essential work has fractured, leaving both unfulfilled and critical positions empty across the constituency's healthcare sector.
I grew up watching my mum leave for her shifts at George Eliot Hospital every morning at 6:30, her Navy healthcare assistant uniform pressed and ready, her ID badge clipped to her pocket with the pride of someone who knew her work mattered. She'd moved from Pakistan when I was 5, and the NHS became her way of giving back to the community that had welcomed us. When I was 14, she brought me to the hospital open day and I watched her explain blood pressure readings to elderly patients in the cardiology ward, switching between English and Urdu depending on what they needed to hear. That was the moment I knew I wanted to be a doctor. I threw myself into my A-levels at North Warwickshire and South Leicestershire College, studying chemistry, biology and maths with the single-minded focus of someone who could see exactly where they wanted to be in 10 years' time. My teachers said I had the highest grades they'd seen in years. Chemistry was my strongest subject, but I loved them all because each one was a building block toward the same goal, medical school, then back to serve the community that had shaped me. In 2016, I applied to study medicine at University of Birmingham. The rejection letter arrived in March, polite but final. No feedback, just a standard paragraph about the competitive nature of medical admissions. I told myself it was normal that everyone gets rejected somewhere and spent the summer working at the local pharmacy to build healthcare experience. The following year, I cast the net wider. Warwick Medical School, Birmingham again, plus Leicester and Keele. 4 applications, 4 rejections. The letters all said the same thing. Variations on, unfortunately, we cannot offer you a place this year due to the competitive nature of our program. That's when I decided to go straight to the source. I contacted Health Education England West Midlands directly, explaining that I had the grades, the passion, and the local connection to train as a doctor in the region that needed me. The response came from someone in their workforce planning team. Unfortunately, we cannot expand medical training places due to treasury spending constraints on our budget allocation. While we recognize the demand from excellent candidates like yourself, our funded places are fixed by government settlement. It sounded reasonable. Budgets have limits. I accepted it and adjusted my plan. I took a job as a pharmacy technician at Boots and enrolled on an access course to strengthen my application. The work was fulfilling, helping customers with their prescriptions and learning about medications. But every day, I served people who told me they'd waited weeks for GP appointments or struggled to get specialist referrals. The system needed more doctors, and I was right there, ready to train. In 2019, I tried again, applying to medical schools across the Midlands with renewed determination and an even stronger application. Birmingham's admissions office gave me a phone interview this time, and afterward, the admissions tutor told me something I'll never forget. We'd love to take more students like you, but our training places are capped by government funding limits. We have the capacity to teach more doctors, but we're not funded to do so. I started a biomedical science degree at Coventry University instead, hoping I could transfer into medicine later. The course was fascinating, and I excelled in modules on human physiology and pathology, but it felt like a holding pattern. During my second year, I got a hospital placement at University Hospital Coventry as part of my degree. That's where I saw something that changed everything. I was following a consultant through the Medical Education Center when we passed a corridor I hadn't seen before. Through the windows, I could see rows of examination couches, high-spec monitors, and what looked like simulation equipment for practicing procedures. The rooms were dark and the doors were locked. I asked my placement coordinator about it later, and she paused before answering. That used to house 40 additional medical students until Health Education England cut our allocation in 2018, she said. The simulation labs are all still there, just gathering dust. We had teaching staff ready to run the program, students desperate to join it, and then the funding was pulled. It's heartbreaking, really. I walked back past those rooms the next day and peered through the windows again. state-of-the-art equipment, empty teaching spaces, everything needed to train doctors sitting unused while I and dozens of other qualified candidates remained shut out of medicine. The mannequins for practicing CPR were still there, covered in dust sheets. The computer terminals for virtual surgery training had screensavers running. It was like finding a fully equipped hospital that someone had decided not to open. That was my turning point. I started asking different questions. If the people existed, me and the others I'd met through access courses and reapplication groups, and the buildings existed and the teaching staff existed and the NHS desperately needed more doctors, what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would connect qualified candidates to medical training. That wasn't an accounting problem. That was a political decision dressed up in the language of impossible budgets. I'm still here, still working in healthcare as a biomedical scientist, still watching the system I wanted to join struggle with the very shortages that keeping me out had created. But I understand something now that I didn't when I first got those rejection letters. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money as though it were a law of physics rather than a policy choice. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the doctors who were standing right there, ready to serve the patients who needed them. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the candidates existed. We did. Whether the training facilities could be provided, they already existed, gathering dust. Whether the NHS needed more doctors, obviously it did. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It's the same logic as a household saying, we cannot afford it, except a household doesn't issue its own currency, the government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the training programs and the people who could have staffed the wards. This isn't just my story, it's the story of every constituency where people with skills and dedication exist side by side with public services crying out for staff, while someone in Westminster insists the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. The key holders just chose to keep it locked.
What Malik experienced has a name: fake experts. This is when critics cite economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. For decades, tobacco companies paid scientists to question the link between smoking and cancer, selecting researchers willing to contradict overwhelming evidence for the right fee. The technique worked because people trusted anyone with credentials, regardless of who funded their conclusions. The same dynamic operates in economic policy. When Health Education England told Malik there was no money for medical training, they were echoing economists who insist government budgets work like household finances. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, the argument goes. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It doesn't need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. Qualified candidates like Malik, training facilities, teaching staff, hospital placements. And in Nuneaton, those resources were sitting idle. The simulation labs gathered dust while wards struggled with understaffing. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Nuneaton ranks 181 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. The constituency has 2,104 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £16.1 million, as recorded in 360, giving grant nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.